Tonight was night one of the 2024 WWE draft. It is in the books. And I can tell you, it was a very boring show. This was one of the most boring drafts that I have ever sat through here that WWE has ever produced. But it is only the first half. We have another night coming up this Monday, and hopefully it will be a more interesting show, because tonight there was a lot of talking, there was very little action, and there was really not a whole lot to speak of coming out of the actual draft itself. We did get three new matches added to the Backlash card. We now know that Bianca Belair and Jade Cargill are going to be challenging for the women's tag team titles, which we pretty much already knew. We know that Bayley is going to be defending her women's championship in a triple threat match against both Naomi and Tiffany Stratton, which you could have figured out probably from last week's show. And also you could have figured out that Kevin Owens was going to have to find some help, and he's got some help now in the form of Randy Orton. And it will be Kevin Owens and Randy Orton taking on the Bloodline, Solo Sikoa and MFT Tama Tonga. I still have no idea what MFT means. They have not told us. It's part of his name now. He's the MFT. I don't know. Don't ask me. But that's what they're calling him. So that tag team match is now official for Backlash as well. Jacob Fatu on his way. He's on his way in. I think Jacob Fatu, hopefully he's got his passport ready. Jacob Fatu is going to be taking a little trip to France, I think, in less than 2 weeks. So a very boring draft because there were no major moves. WWE, Paul Levesque, they played it very safe, as far as major names here in this draft. But if you took a look at the pool that they posted on WWE.com, because many days ago they put the pool of eligibility up for Raw and for SmackDown. And if you took a look at that list, you really should not be surprised that there were not a whole lot of big changes in the draft tonight. Now, that doesn't mean that I'm excusing the fact that they put on a boring show, but if you look at this list, and I have it in front of me right now, this is the list of talent that was eligible to be drafted tonight. So for the people wondering where was Gunther and where was this person and that person, they're not eligible. They'll be eligible on Monday. Otherwise, why wouldn't he go number one or number two? I agree. But if you look at the list of talent tonight, you have AJ Styles, who was drafted in the later rounds, even though he is the man challenging Cody Rhodes for the WWE Championship at Backlash. For whatever reason, we saw some people go before AJ Styles in this draft that just had me scratching my head going, what the fuck are these GMs thinking here? How could AJ Styles, the number one contender for your WWE title, be going after someone like Nia Jax in the draft? Okay, you had some moves like that that didn't really make a lot of sense. That being said, I might have moved AJ Styles over to Raw. And that way the idea is, well, if he beats Cody, he might take the title with him, right? You could have kind of played that angle up. So I would have at least considered moving AJ to Raw. They didn't do that. I look at some of the other names on this list. Look, Alpha Academy was listed. Chad Gable and all of his guys. You know that Chad Gable is not going anywhere because they're doing a story on Raw right now with Chad going after the Intercontinental title, and the champions are frozen. So Sami Zayn was not going anywhere. The Intercontinental title was not going anywhere. And so you knew Chad Gable was going to stay on Monday nights. So that was not a big surprise. People like Bianca Belair was eligible tonight. She's obviously in the middle of this tag team run now with Jade Cargill. So you had a figure that you knew she was not going to go anywhere. You got somebody like Bron Breakker. I'll talk about him. He was eligible tonight. He should not have been eligible. The man was literally on SmackDown only weeks ago signing a contract when Nick Ald is taking cheesy photos. And all of a sudden, he's potentially drafted to another show. I don't understand the logic behind that either. But LA Knight was in the pool of talent. Randy Orton, again, these big names, Seth Rollins, they didn't move. They're in the same spot that they were in before, which is not a surprise. Sheamus, the Bloodline. I mean, again, you look at this list, it's not really a big surprise. But unfortunately, it made for a very lackluster show. Now, night two is coming up on Monday. I will go through the list of eligible talent at the end, and I will go one by one and let you know who I think might be moving or who I would move We'll go through those names a little bit later, but there was a main event on this show tonight between Cody Rhodes and the newest addition from the NXT roster to the SmackDown roster. His name is Carmelo Hayes, which really shouldn't be a surprise at all. We've seen Carmelo Hayes on the main roster several times this year. He was a babyface at the time. I don't really understand why they brought him up if he wasn't officially up. Same thing with Bron Breakker. I don't really understand what the need was to put him on TV until after WrestleMania, but they chose to do that too. Carmelo Hayes is going to be a star. I think that the ceiling for someone like Trick Williams in NXT is actually higher than Carmelo Hayes, and Carmelo Hayes will go far. Trick Williams is not ready yet. He's the new face of NXT. But we had a main event here, his very first official night on SmackDown. And in the main event, we had Cody Rhodes, non-title obviously, going one-on-one with Carmelo Hayes. He wanted to shoot his shot. The challenge was issued. It was accepted. We had a main event, and I held my breath. Because Cody Rhodes went flying through the air on an attempted Cody Cutter. I'm trying to figure out exactly what these two were trying to do. I think I know what they were going for. It did not work. It looked like a botched spot. They were each going for springboard cutters at the same time, and they missed each other. But the way that Cody landed, I'm telling you right now, and I hope I'm wrong, I would not be at all surprised if we come to find out that Cody Rhodes hurt his shoulder on that landing. The way that he landed and the way he was selling it, I hope he's the greatest seller of all time. Because that is the one guy that WWE can ill afford to lose to a major injury right now. And they have been bitten hard by the injury bug, okay? Dominic Mysterio is out. Rhea Ripley is out. Charlotte Flair is still out. They're going to get some people back. Sonya Deville should be back soon. But they got a bunch of people that have been bitten by the injury bug. Even Drew McIntyre, but he's going to work through it. The last thing that this company needs is for Cody Rhodes to go down with a major injury. So I am hoping that he is okay. But that was a very scary moment. And we'll talk about that and everything else. This is your Friday night SmackDown review here. It is April 26. Before we get into all of the SmackDown stuff and all of this draft nonsense, we have to start with some news here. And I wasn't even going to talk about it. I didn't tweet anything about it, you know, hours ago when people were going nuts. But there was an article on the Sportico website concerning Vince McMahon and Nick Khan. And again, I read it. Now, if you actually read the story, I failed to see where the actual news was, but people were allowing their imaginations to run wild here, especially when it comes to Nick Khan. And I'm here to tell you that there is really nothing to talk about, but the story came out and it mentioned that Vince McMahon is selling the last of his shares in TKO Group, a move that would end the executive's association with the business that he has worked in for more than 50 years. TKO filed a prospectus on Friday afternoon showing that McMahon may sell up to 8 million shares that he holds in the company worth more than $776 million at the time that the market closed earlier this afternoon. Also listed as a seller in this prospectus is WWE President Nick Khan, who also has filed to sell what appears to be all of his holdings of 234,000 plus shares, an amount that includes restricted stock units, which the executive has amassed. And that was really the crux of the story there. And so people started to let their imaginations run wild with, oh my God, Nick Khan, he's selling all of his shares. He's on his way out of WWE. This is the end of Nick Khan. Maybe Paul Levesque is next. Again, people need to just chill out. This is all standard shit. We heard about Vince McMahon putting these shares up weeks ago. This is just a formality in the process. So as far as he's concerned, he may or may not end up selling those remaining shares. He's on his way out completely. He will soon be completely divested from this company. It's just a matter of time. But he has not actually sold his shares yet. Likewise, Nick Khan selling his shares doesn't mean shit. It doesn't mean anything. He is still the president of the company. He is selling these shares. Maybe he just wants to sell them and he wants to collect the cash. He wants to cash out. Who's to say? It doesn't mean that he is going anywhere. So calm down. It's a non-story. So I wanted to get that out of the way first because people asking questions, what does this mean for the future of WWE? It means nothing. It means we have a lot of people that don't know too much about the stock market. Neither do I, so we're going to move on here. But I know that. I know that this is a non-issue. Now, at the beginning of tonight's show, let's get into this. Let's get into this SmackDown show. Enough of this stock talk. Gives a fuck about Vince McMahon. Fuck that guy. Corey Graves. He ran down the rules of the WWE draft. We had four rounds tonight. That's 8 picks for SmackDown, 8 picks for Raw. 6 rounds are going to be coming up on Monday because Monday it's a longer show. So we have 6 rounds, which means 12 and 12. The key difference in this draft compared to drafts of the past, and I will admit that if this was not the case, it might have shaken things up a little bit more, but I agree with the move to freeze the champions. All of the champions on the main roster, except for the women's tag team champions, were ineligible from being drafted. They were protected. They have draft immunity. So all the champions as they were coming into tonight are the same champions coming out of the show here tonight. SmackDown got the first pick tonight in each round, this being SmackDown. So on Monday, it'll be Raw getting the first pick at the beginning of each round. And the rosters will officially lock on the Monday after Backlash. So Backlash is coming up on May 4th, I believe it is. And then that Monday, May 6th, is when the rosters will officially lock and all of these draft picks and changes will officially take effect. So they had the traditional war rooms set up in the back. We've seen them do this before in past drafts where they have the one shot of the Raw room and then the one shot of the SmackDown room. In the Raw room, I noticed JBL was in there, Devon Dudley, Torrey Wilson, Bully Ray, Teddy Long, and Michelle McCool were in the SmackDown room. So this is quite the crew that they amassed here for these two war rooms. That'd be a hell of a trios match. Caleb Braxton was in the back with Paul Heyman, who had some news to share with us. This was a rip-roaring way, by the way, to kick off this first night of the draft, where you have Paul Heyman. The first thing they did on the show tonight was have Paul Heyman say that the biggest star, one of the biggest stars anyway, right up there with Cody, in the company, Roman Reigns, who was supposed to be eligible to be drafted with the other members of the Bloodline, was officially withdrawing from his eligibility in tonight's draft. So Roman Reigns, in fact, would not be drafted, and the reason being, he is not going to be around for quite some time. Roman is out there, he's making movies, he's hanging out with his 5 or 6 kids, he's living life, right? He got that title off of his waist, it's like a huge weight has been lifted off of his shoulders. The last thing this guy wants to do is come back and wrestle. So we're probably not going to see him at least until SummerSlam. So that was the whole point here. Why be drafted if he's not going to be around for a while? And so Heyman said that they don't want him to hog the number one draft pick when he's not going to be returning anytime soon. He said the pressure now is on Nick Aldis and Adam Pearce. And he said that he is intrigued. Now, from there, they cut to a live shot of Jackie Redmond. She was back in Orlando at the Performance Center. What they did was they had basically everybody from NXT and the PC sitting in chairs in the ring, and they took the ropes down, sitting in chairs in the ring and outside around the ring and in the stands, and they're all making noise. You know, they have somebody off camera, I'm sure, going, you know, make noise, and everybody's screaming and shouting. Everybody's all excited. And she was standing in the middle of all this mayhem. She said a few things. I didn't even pay attention to what she was saying before she threw it back to Corey Graves in the arena, who was in the ring because Nick Aldis was busy. He was in the war room. He was in the war room conferring with his legends about what picks to make. By the way, some of these picks, I think he was conferring with the wrong legends. But he said, I'll handle the moderation here for our first segment, which was the contract signing for the WWE Championship match coming up in Backlash between AJ Styles and Cody Rhodes. AJ was out first to his, what I assume is his shitty Def Rebel theme. Now, I always say it, if you're going to change somebody's music, at least upgrade it. I don't understand the logic behind downgrading. Why would you downgrade it and make it worse? I don't understand that. Come up with better music. Don't actually make it even worse than it was before. So anyway, not a fan of AJ's new theme. Oh, man. Got me choking. I'm choking on the shittiness of AJ's theme here. Look at this. I'm dying. As soon as I said AJ's thought, as soon as I said Def Rebel, I started choking. My goodness. Oh, man. Cody was out next. He was wearing what looked like a pink suit. The fashion plate that he is. So they had separate tables in the ring. And Corey Graves was in the middle. They had a podium in the middle. And on the podium was Cody's WWE Championship. He sat the title on the podium. And they each took a seat at their respective tables. Styles said, you know, before I signed this contract, I don't know if people realize this, but you got two Georgia boys here about to go at it in France for the WWE Championship. And he knows that people may not like him right now, but, you know, he said that LA Knight, he got under his skin. He lost at WrestleMania, but what happened? He gained his composure, and he beat LA Knight to earn the right to challenge Cody at Backlash. And Styles said that he respects Cody. They haven't crossed paths yet, but they have been down the same roads outside of WWE. So, I mean, that I would have been shocked if they didn't at least allude to the fact that the two of them came up basically, you know, outside of WWE, the whole Bullet Club thing. They didn't mention that, but that's what he was getting at here. He said both men also got advice from one person in particular, and that person was the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes. Because it would not be a Cody Rhodes segment without somebody bringing up Dusty Rhodes. And he says he learned a lot from Dusty. Now, I will say I was surprised by one thing here. Not surprised he brought up Dusty, but I thought he would make mention of the fact that he shared the ring with Dusty at one point, because they did in the early days of TNA. It was like 2003. There's at least one match. AJ Styles went one-on-one with Dusty Rhodes. And I figured there would be a mention of that. Not TNA, but just the fact that he shared the ring with Dusty, and he didn't mention that. So I was kind of surprised by that. But AJ said that Dusty taught him how to carry the weight of a championship. And he sees the weight of the undisputed title. He goes, it's not just leather and gold. He says, we're going to find out if Cody can really carry that at Backlash. And with that, AJ signed the contract. Then it was over to Cody. And he asked Cincinnati what they wanted to talk about. They can talk about respect. There's not a locker room that you will find anywhere in the world that does not respect AJ Styles. He said he called AJ the modern-day excellence of execution, and he respects the mutual paths that they have gone down, but that goes to the wayside of Backlash. It sounds like AJ is implying that he can't carry the weight of that title. Well, good thing the man that trained him once told him it's not about winning the title, it's about keeping it. And he said he knows they've never touched before, but no matter how phenomenal AJ is, this will not be a dream match for Cody. It is a must-win match. And Cody signed the contract. Then he offered a handshake. And initially, AJ did not accept the handshake. He considered it. And then he said, you know, watching you finish your story was a beautiful thing. But it's a shame that that run won't last long, and I'm going to win the title of Backlash. And AJ shook his hand, and he left. And Cody held the title up high. And that was the end of the contract signing. So there was no physicality, other than them touching hands and shaking hands, there was no physicality at all here between these two men. And I can at least appreciate the fact that we didn't get the standard formulaic contract signing where it breaks down, somebody overturns the table, you know, AJ went to go throw a punch and Cody knocked him down instead. But the problem is, when you have a contract signing that literally is just going to be talking and signing the contract, you want there to be dialogue that is actually interesting and engaging and will make you want to see these two men beat the living hell out of each other. You want to see these two, or at least one of them, you know, go in, pretty hard on the other guy. And so as promos go, there was no trash talking here. This was very tame. This was very lame. And there really wasn't a whole lot to it. So while I appreciate them breaking out of the usual formula, it would have been nice if they had something to really sink their teeth into. But they didn't really go at each other here. It was very, very, very dull. So now, as Cody was leaving, he was interrupted by time to play the game. And out comes Triple H, shook Cody's hand, raised his arm in the aisleway. And then he invited Cody to come over with him. There was a podium set up in the aisle because we were about to get round number one of the WWE draft here, night one. Triple H said that this draft is a bit different. He said those GMs in the back, they have to understand that it's just as much about protecting the roster they have as much as it is about bringing in a new roster. And that right there should have been a telltale sign of what was to come. That was basically Triple H's way of warning us that these rosters are not going to change radically at all. And so don't think that there's going to be such a huge shakeup that Raw and SmackDown are going to look radically different at the end of this. Looking back at it now, he was basically giving us a heads up. I didn't realize that at the time that he said it, though. So he told Cody, since champions are protected and you're going to be staying here on SmackDown, maybe you could help me out by reading the SmackDown picks, and then Triple H would read the Raw picks. And since this is SmackDown, he said that Cody could go first. So with the first pick in the 2024 WWE draft, boy, isn't this exciting? Isn't this more exciting than the NFL draft that's also going on right now? Isn't the WWE draft where it's at? How many people did they have at the NFL draft, by the way? They said like 200,000 people or something. I saw like a crowd shot from outside. They had to shut the gates because they had no more room to let people in. There were so many people there. But here we are talking about the WWE draft. First pick in the draft, SmackDown chooses Bianca Belair. Triple H announced that with the second pick of the first round, Raw selects main event Jey Uso, which I'm not saying that Jey Uso is not over. I'm just saying it's a bit of a questionable number one pick. He is very over, though. You know what? He is challenging for the World Heavyweight title at Backlash, so I'll give them that. He is not the top babyface even on Raw, let alone in the company, but he's a big enough name that I'll let that slide. With the third pick in the draft, SmackDown selects NXT's Carmelo Hayes. And it was pointed out on commentary that that makes it the first time an NXT star has been taken in the first round of one of these WWE drafts. And with the fourth and final pick of round number one here in the draft, Raw selects Seth Rollins, who is going to be staying on Monday nights. At this point, Carmelo Hayes made his entrance with a microphone in hand. Hayes said that when they talk about who's next up and who's the hottest out, they call him Carmelo Hayes. The fans started a whoop that trick chant, and Hayes said he already did. He said, Cody recently said that when you come at the king, you best not miss. And he told Cody this, said, when he shoots, he doesn't miss. And Hayes said that he came here to shoot his shot. Plain and simple. That's why he's out here. And he wants to shoot his shot against Cody Rhodes. Well, the least you could do is take the guy out to dinner first. I mean, come on. So Cody then took the microphone and he teased that, I don't know, maybe the crowd doesn't want to see me wrestle a match tonight. So, of course, they all cheered. And then he said, well, I don't know, maybe I don't have my gear with me. And everybody booed. And then he said, no, of course I do. And he accepted Melo's challenge for later in the show. So this right here, see, I come with graphics too. It is a visual medium after all. This is round number one. Bianca Belair to SmackDown, Jey Uso to Raw, Carmelo Hayes to SmackDown, and Seth Rollins to Raw. So as you can see there, no major movement outside of Carmelo Hayes getting the call-up from NXT. And on his very first night, He already had a match lined up with Cody Rhodes. That was a big way to, I can't even say introduce, because he's already been on SmackDown a few times, but a good way to reintroduce him to the SmackDown audience. Seth Rollins going to Raw was obvious. Since Becky Lynch is frozen there, she's the women's champion on Raw, she's not going anywhere. They're not going to separate the two of them. So that's not a surprise. But I do have a question. I'm a little confused about something. Why is Seth Rollins eligible to be drafted while he is injured? And CM Punk is eligible on Monday to be drafted and he's injured? Yet Rhea Ripley is not eligible to be drafted. She's not listed with the other members of the Judgment Day, because if you look at the pool for Monday coming up, it says the Judgment Day, and specifically Finn Balor, Dominic Mysterio, and JD McDonagh. Damian Priest can't be drafted because he's a champion, and Rhea is nowhere to be found. She was a champion. She's not a champion anymore. So explain that to me. At least be consistent with things. It's the little inconsistencies that drive me nuts. So I have not quite figured out why Rhea Ripley would not be listed with the other Judgment Day members, but unless that changes between now and Monday, she is not. We had Rey Mysterio and Dragon Lee taking on Angel and Humberto. We had Humberto coming at Lee right at the jump. Dragon Lee fights back with a Hurricanrana and then a dive to the outside. There was a spot here where Dragon Lee, he had a crossbody in the ring, and Angel made a blind tag, and then he's standing on the bottom. I think what happened was he was standing on the bottom rope and pulling the middle rope up. So when Dragon Lee went to go hit the ropes, he flew out of the ring and he took a hard spill out to the floor. He took a hell of a bump to the floor, and that took us into a commercial break. When they came back, both legal men were down. We had the double tag spot. I mean, this was going quickly here. This is what I mean when I say this show was fucking boring, because not only did you have all this draft stuff and a lot of talking, but the matches barely had any time. I mean, there was no match. I mean, the main event was good. I enjoyed that main event, but everything else on this show was so rushed and it was so quick so they can get to the next draft segment. I can't imagine if you were in the crowd. You know, some people go, they just want to see stars. So they just want to hear the music. They want to see the entrance. They just want to see people. They want to see Cody. They were advertising CM Punk for both nights of the draft. I don't know if he came out off the air, but there was no CM Punk on tonight's show. So if you paid for a ticket to come see CM Punk, again, unless he came out later on, I'd be pretty upset about that. So, some people come for the stars, but if you wanted action, this was not the show for you. I mean, I'd be sitting there going, what the hell's going on here? I'm ready to hit the parking lot. Anyway, we got a double tag spot. Rey ran wild on Angel, including a code red, but Humberto broke up the pin. Rey then sent Humberto out of the ring, and Dragon Lee tagged in. Rey hit a 619, and Dragon Lee followed with his Project Dragon finish for the win. I guarantee you, I don't even need to read the reports. I guarantee you they got their time cut. Not a doubt in my mind, things ran a little long at the beginning of the show. These guys had their time cut. The way they were rushing through this match, not a doubt in my mind. Now, when the match was over, Santos Escobar and Electra Lopez, they walk out in the aisleway. And Escobar says that, I am many things. A liar is not one of them. And he said, Electra has been hard at work for weeks now, trying to find out who attacked Dragon Lee all those many weeks ago. And she found some security footage. Oh, boy. Another wrestling show this month where we have to see security footage from backstage. Where have I heard this before? So the footage that he's about to show, he thinks Rey is going to be very interested in this. So he pitches it to the footage, and it shows Carlito in the back assaulting Dragon Lee, throws him into the wall. He's just kicking this guy's ass, and he's looking around. Nobody's around. And then he gets down, he starts yelling for help, and he's pretending like he discovered him, when in reality, it was Carlito who actually beat the hell out of this man. So Carlito's in the ring, standing behind Dragon Lee and behind Rey. Now they have their backs turned to this guy. Okay. This is kind of goofy, the way they did this here. So they're in the ring. They see Carlito on the video beating up Dragon Lee. Dragon Lee is in the ring. He's seeing himself get beaten up by Carlito. Does he immediately turn around and ask why? Does he immediately turn around and go after Carlito? He stands there. Dragon Lee stands there and watches the footage while Carlito is right behind him. This man has his back turned to this guy. So, of course, after a while, Carlito's looking all manic, you know, like he doesn't know what to do. And so, ultimately, he shoves Dragon Lee into Rey Mysterio. And then he hit a backstabber on Dragon Lee. And then he scurried out of the arena and through the crowd. So, this was, yeah, and John is in the chat. John was in the building, and he says, yeah, people were laughing a lot. I'd be one of those people if I was in the building. I'd be the one in the crowd going, turn the fuck around. So, of course, he ate a backstabber. Good. He's an idiot. He deserves it. This was the most predictable turn ever. I'm sure myself and I'm sure everybody else in the fucking world was predicting that Carlito was going to be revealed as the mystery attacker. They didn't work this segment the way that they did it, the way that they sort of formatted this. They did not work this in the way that I was expecting them to. What I thought would happen here is that they would show the footage. It would clearly show that Carlito was the attacker. And then Carlito would have a look on his face, like either a serious look or a smile or a smirk. And then he would attack him again from behind and just lay a beatdown on the LWO. And then maybe he would go over towards Escobar. And maybe he would end up becoming a new member of Legado del Fantasma, which is what I would do. I would have him link up with Legado. But they didn't do it that way. Instead, he was like, oh, he was all panicked, like, oh, I've been caught, you know? And then, again, those two guys continuing to stand there with their backs turned is just, it will never not be funny watching that. Because who in their right mind in that situation would not turn around to look at the guy standing behind them? So the way they did it was very strange. It was very stupid. Now, as far as the heel turn, I'm all for it. Carlito has done nothing since they brought him back. Nothing. And I can't say he's looked all that impressive in the matches that he's had. He had that one match on SmackDown. I think it was a street fight. Might have been with Escobar. That was pretty good. But they haven't really done anything with him. The focus has not been on him. He's been part of that group, and the focus was more on Rey. And Carlito has been a background player. Carlito is going to be better off as a heel anyway. Does that mean they're going to do something with him after he gets this match with Dragon Lee out of the way, which you know that's going to happen? After that, that may be it. He may be right back in the same spot he was in before, where he's sort of in the background. They're not doing much with him. But I can't see how this is going to hurt him. I don't see how he can be in any worse of a position as a heel coming out of this than he was already as a babyface. So I think it may end up being the best thing for him, honestly. Now we had Bron Breakker one-on-one with Cedric Alexander. Here's the play-by-play rundown for this match. Bron ran at Cedric. Alexander briefly countered. And then he went for a back springboard move. So picture Jay Lethal going for the lethal injection. He does the springboard off the ropes, and when he does so, Bron Breakker catches him with a spear and cuts him in half. And he pins Cedric. If this went 15 minutes, I'd be surprised. Or 15 seconds. If this went 15 minutes, I'd be very surprised. 15 seconds is what I meant. If this went 15 seconds, I would be surprised. A dominant win for Bron Breakker, and there's really not much else to say about it. Cedric Alexander is in the spot that he's in. Bron Breakker is a star of the future. Bron Breakker is going to headline WrestleMania multiple times in his career. Future world champion. How they're using him right now is very smart. He's explosive. He goes out there. It's like the Goldberg push. I mean, it's a simple formula. All you need to do is let the guy loose, right? He's a powerhouse. So you can do these spots where he spears somebody out of midair. I mean, the way he runs the ropes, I mean, they've clocked him at like 30 miles an hour or something running the ropes. Just let him go out there and smash guys. That's it. That's all he has to do. That'll be the quickest way to get him over as a dominant player. Cedric Alexander? Well, hey, sorry. He's not the one getting pushed right now. Bron Breakker needs people like Cedric Alexander. I was going to say Cameron Grimes, but he's not there anymore. But those are the kinds of people that are going to be used in spots like this to help get Bron Breakker over, because Bron is the one they're banking on. Now we got a video recap of Tiffany Stratton interfering in last week's main event between Bayley and Naomi for the WWE Women's Championship. Backstage, Tiffany spoke to Nick Aldis and asked, "Where's my title shot?" Because she dropped both women last week. She wants to know when she's getting her title shot. Aldis said that my watch is not set to Tiffy time, and that he nearly pushed her to the back of the line, but someone convinced him not to. And Aldis said that she would have another match with Naomi tonight, and the winner would get a title shot at Backlash. Bayley walked up and was laughing and said it was actually my idea. And Tiffany told Bayley that she had a Tiffany Piffany, and suggested that Bayley could come out to the ring later on to watch her beat Naomi, as she could not do last week. You'll want to tune in for episode 859 of the podcast this weekend, because we have the return of Sad Tweet, and it pertains to one Tiffany Stratton. So we'll cover that on Sunday. We had Michelle McCool and Tori Wilson coming out to announce the second round picks in tonight's WWE draft. McCool went first for SmackDown, and she announced that with the first pick of the second round, SmackDown picks the Viper, Randy Orton, staying right where he is on SmackDown. Tori Wilson then announced that with the second pick, Raw selects Bron Breakker. He is now moving from SmackDown to Raw. More on that in a second. With the third pick in the draft, SmackDown selects Nia Jax. And with the fourth pick and the final pick of the second round, Raw selects Liv Morgan. So your picks for round number two are as follows. It is Randy Orton to SmackDown, Bron Breakker to Raw, Nia Jax to SmackDown, Liv Morgan to Raw. Randy Orton, now let's break this down here. Randy Orton needs to be on SmackDown because we need to get Randy Orton against Cody Rhodes at some point. I don't know when they're going to do it. Hopefully we won't have to wait too long for it, but that is a natural feud, and they're absolutely out of their minds if they don't do it. So Orton being on SmackDown makes sense to me. Liv Morgan needs to be on Raw for when Rhea Ripley returns. And I think Liv may end up with that women's world title anyway. I think she's, I know she lost the Battle Royal on Monday. That doesn't mean she's not going to end up beating Becky Lynch for that belt. So Liv has to be on Raw. But then, you look here, Nia Jax to SmackDown. In a pool which at this point in the show still had AJ Styles in it and LA Knight in it, right? One of the biggest baby faces in the company. Nick Aldis picks Nia Jax. He should be relieved of his duty for that alone. And I'm not passing judgment on Nia as far as in ring. She's actually gotten better. I'm just saying, based on star power alone, if you were booking this, if you were drafting picks on your own, like a real draft here, and you pick Nia Jax over an LA Knight or an AJ Styles, I would tell you that you need to get your head examined. And then there's Bron Breakker. I said coming into this draft that Bron Breakker and Jade Cargill, and you could maybe throw Sheamus in there too, but more so Bron and Jade, because they spent time on those two. Sheamus just came back one night as a surprise, and he was on Raw. With Bron, they had Nick Aldis and Adam Pearce courting this man for weeks. He had two contracts. He didn't know which contract to pick. He didn't know which one he was going to go with. Ultimately, he chose SmackDown. They did the whole pomp and circumstance, and they had Nick Aldis posing with the contract and all the photographers in the aisleway. Remember that? Jade Cargill, same thing. Both GMs were courting her. Ultimately, Nick Aldis was able to sign her. And so I'm looking at this coming into this draft, and I'm saying, okay, the champions are frozen. They have draft immunity. But why wouldn't a Bron Breakker and a Jade Cargill be immune from being drafted? You should institute some kind of a rule where anybody who is signed with this particular brand in the last 90 days has draft immunity. Because otherwise, what sense does it make to have Nick Aldis and Adam Pearce going in so hard on these people if they could just be drafted to the other show? And that's exactly what happened here. So Nick Aldis had, he had Bron Breakker for all of what, 4 weeks? Maybe six? And now Bron Breakker finds himself on Monday Night Raw. And I understand them not wanting Carmelo Hayes and Bron Breakker to be on the same show. I would do the same thing. I would divide them up. But then I would have sent Hayes to Raw instead. So that was a very stupid move, I thought. Now, at this point, Wade Barrett pointed out how surprising it was that the Bloodline had not been drafted yet. You know, only the most dominant faction in this company in the last 3.5 years. Even though Roman Reigns was no longer part of the crew, it's still Solo Sikoa, Tama Tonga, and Paul Heyman, at this point, had still gone undrafted. We got footage of the Bloodline's beatdown of Kevin Owens last week. Then outside the arena live, Solo Sikoa pulled up to the arena and got out of a big black car. And Paul Heyman was there to greet him. And Solo, again, he was all dressed up in his nice threads. And he asked Paul if the Bloodline had been drafted. And Heyman explained that, well, Roman Reigns had withdrawn from the draft. And with Solo adding new members, nobody really knows what they're getting in the Bloodline. So no, the Bloodline had not yet been drafted. Tama Tonga walked up and Solo asked Heyman if he could repeat himself. But before he could speak, Kevin Owens attacked both of them from behind, Solo and Tama, and officials quickly stepped in to break things up. After a break, Kayla Braxton was standing kind of off the stage. They do these shots now, which I actually like. It's a little production change. But they will have the announcer, whether it's Kathy Kelly or Kayla Braxton or Jackie Redmond, standing in the aisleway with their back turned to the crowd. AEW's done that also. They've had Renee do that on their shows. It's a little minor change in production, but I like it. I think it looks good that way. She called out Bianca Belair, who, of course, was the very first pick in the draft tonight. She asked Bianca about the tag team match coming up at Backlash, which was news to me. I guess this was the official announcement here. They had not yet made it official before this, that it will be Bianca and Jade challenging the Kabuki Warriors for the women's tag team titles at Backlash. And Bianca said that she's had a lot of history with Damage Control. Yeah, no shit. And Jade is the perfect person to help her deal with them. She said that the Kabuki Warriors will not have a reason to show up on SmackDown after they win the women's tag team titles at Backlash. Asuka and Kairi Sane, they made their entrance and they held up their titles. Then Jade's music hit. Out comes Jade. All the women now are yelling at each other. In the background, all of a sudden, Kevin Owens and Tama Tonga, they continue their brawl. They brawl out through the entranceway, down the aisle, all the way to the ring. Owens was pummeling Tama. Solo Sikoa ran out. He attacked Owens and gave the Bloodline the upper hand. Tama Tonga started to beat up some of the random security geeks who ran into the ring to try to calm them down. Randy Orton's music hits, and out to the ring comes Orton. He saves the day. He went for an RKO. Solo slipped out, though, and Kevin Owens went, and he hugged Randy Orton. Joey says he is done with the NFL draft. More Sala Monster, please. Everybody should need more Sala Monster in their life. Welcome. Enough of that fake NFL stuff, right? This right here, this is the real draft right here. Bet you Paul Levesque is more popular than that other guy over there, Mr. Goodell. So anyway, like I said last week, where I said Randy Orton is going to come to the rescue and he's going to tag with Kevin Owens. We're going to get a tag team match, probably a Backlash. And now it's been made official for Backlash. It will be Randy Orton and Kevin Owens challenging Solo Sikoa and Tama Tonga. And if Jacob Fatu does not cost Jey Uso the World Heavyweight Championship on that show, it's more likely that this will be the spot where he makes his debut. Now, there were reports originally that Fatu, and it might have been from PW Insider, that Fatu was going to debut tonight on the draft show, and then plans changed, and it was pushed to another time, with the word being that they're not in any rush to debut him. But Backlash would seem to me, unless he cannot travel out of the country for some reason. And I know with his background, he's had issues in the past. He was incarcerated many years ago. I assume it's fine at this point, but I don't know. Unless there's some reason why he can't be in France, Backlash would make the most sense, and he could help the Bloodline to a victory over Owens and Randy Orton. But we're going to see Fatu very soon. That will be another big pickup for SmackDown. Because we know Fatu is going to go to SmackDown. He's going to be part of the Bloodline. So when he comes in, now you've got Tama Tonga on SmackDown, and you've got Jacob Fatu. Carmelo Hayes is new to the brand. And all of a sudden, the SmackDown roster, you throw in Orton and Owens and Cody. SmackDown's looking pretty good. Now, after a break, Bubba Ray Dudley and Devon Dudley were out to Chance of ECW and Chance of We Want Tables. How predictable. I mean, come up with some new stuff here. You could chant Busted Open when Bully comes out, right? He's on Busted Open every week. They came out to introduce round number 3 of the draft, and they put their Dudley glasses on first. Bubba said that with the first pick of round number 3, SmackDown selects L.A. Knight. So in the third round, finally, this guy gets drafted. Devon said with the second pick of the third round, Raw selects Ricochet. Bubba said that with the third pick of the third round, SmackDown selects Solo Sikoa, Tama Tonga, and Paul Heyman. Finally, in the third round of this fucking draft, the Bloodline gets picked up. And with the fourth pick of the third round, Raw selects Sheamus. So the rundown here, LA Knight and the Bloodline are staying blue. Ricochet is staying red, and Sheamus is staying red. So these were all basically everybody here is staying put right where they were. This was the least exciting round of the entire draft. There were no changes. Literally no changes here. Just to tell us that all these people are staying exactly where they were. Now, at this point, we had Ricochet and Nia Jax picked in the draft before AJ Styles. The man who is challenging Cody Rhodes for the WWE Championship in less than 2 weeks. Make it make sense. Please. Please. Now, LA Knight, I like the fact that he's sticking around on SmackDown. I could have gone either way. You know, he could have had Raw, you know, to himself kind of on top with a couple of other baby faces. But on SmackDown, I still say that it should be LA Knight and Logan Paul for that United States title. That could only happen if LA Knight stays on SmackDown. So him being on SmackDown means we're definitely getting him and Logan Paul at some point, maybe SummerSlam. Sheamus to Raw, same thing. I mean, it makes sense. Keeps those hopes alive of him winning the Intercontinental title at some point. They have to tell that story. You know, they still drop mentions on commentary about the fact that it's the one title he hasn't held before. So he needs to be on whatever show that title is going to be on. The Bloodline, moving so late in the draft, I'm assuming is going to play into the story in some way. Otherwise, it just doesn't make any sense. It just doesn't. It's one of those head-scratching moves here. Yeah, maybe that's their way of shocking people, the fact that the Bloodline went third. To me, it's not really shocking people. It's just showing how inept these general managers are. Because even if you look at it and go, well, Roman Reigns was subtracted from the Bloodline, so that makes the Bloodline less attractive. Yes, but Roman Reigns is eventually going to come back. And when Roman Reigns comes back, and he's obviously one of the biggest stars in the fucking business, where do you think he's going to go? Whether he's with them or against them, he's going to go where his family is. So if you're Nick Aldis, or if you're Adam Pearce, you bring in the Bloodline, your chances of eventually drafting Roman Reigns have gone up significantly. It's very stupid. I'm just trying to apply some common sense here. We had Tiffany Stratton one-on-one against Naomi. Bayley was at ringside doing commentary. Tiffany landed a hip attack, sent Naomi out onto the apron. She attempted a suplex back inside, but Naomi avoided it and slammed Tiffany into the apron with a modified facebuster. Then she jumped off the apron onto Tiffany with a splits version of a splash. After a break, both women hit simultaneous facebusters. Naomi came back with a kick, drove Tiffany into the second turnbuckle with a bulldog. All of a sudden, Nia Jax shows up at ringside, attacks Bayley, and Naomi goes out there to try to intervene. Nia attacks her as well, and the referee calls for the bell. What a wonderful finish here to this match on this exciting night of wrestling. This is how this match came to an end. The finish sucked. Now, I was not expecting a clean finish anyway. I was expecting some kind of shenanigans to lead to what we ended up getting, which is a triple threat for Backlash. And at least the way they did it, it introduces Nia as a dominant player. You know, they had her beating up a bunch of people, so she beat the baby faces up. But you don't have a match like this with a finish like that, and when it's over, go, wow, that was great. That was time well spent. No, it wasn't. The match was nothing special. The finish sucked. This was a waste of time. Because the way things were left last week, you could have made the exact same announcement. I was already expecting a triple threat. We didn't need this segment to get us to where we ultimately got. You could have cut this whole segment out, and people would have guessed that we were getting a three-way anyway. But they didn't want to beat either woman, so this is what you end up with. Backstage, Karrion Kross and Scarlett were dragging a cameraman to observe AOP destroying the New Catch Republic. Karrion said no matter what brand they're on, the violence would continue until they got what they wanted. And what that is, I would love to know. I don't know what that is. They don't have trios titles in this company. So what exactly is it that they're after? I'm not so sure. Also in the back, B-Fab and the Street Profits were having a conversation. They've got a tag team title match coming up on SmackDown next week against Grayson Waller and Austin Theory, who wandered over with their new titles. How good do those new tag titles look? I wish they had a little bit of color in them in the middle. Some blue, maybe. But those titles are infinitely better than what they had before. Anyway, Bobby Lashley showed up and he scared off the champions. We had Teddy Long and JBL out next for the final round of the draft here on night number one. Teddy Long went first, and he announced that with the first pick of the fourth round, SmackDown selects, finally, say it with me now, AJ Styles. Possibly your next WWE champion, but not really, is drafted in the fourth round on night number one. JBL said that with the second pick of the fourth round, Raw selects the Alpha Academy. Chad Gable, Otis, Tozawa, and Maxxine Dupri. With the third pick of the fourth round, SmackDown selects Andrade. And with the fourth and final pick of the fourth round, Raw selects Kiana James. So Kiana James is the surprise pick from NXT. Of course, nobody reacted because most people in the audience probably have no idea who she is. This week's episode is sponsored by Factor. You know, the weather is starting to get real nice, starting to warm up. That means summer is right around the corner. I want to make sure I'm eating right, but I don't want to do it and not enjoy the food that I'm eating. With Factor meals, I don't need to stress because I know that every meal is ready to eat and never frozen. They're chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in 2 minutes flat. The last thing I want to do when I'm hungry is have to wait. Then I get hangry. You don't want to see me when I'm hangry. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Plus more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. Why wouldn't you want a chef-prepared meal on the table in 2 minutes? It's like having your own personal chef in your kitchen. That's what you get with Factor's ready-to-eat meals. If you're looking for gourmet options, try meals with premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning up, so it's no fuss and no mess. They're also tailored to your schedule. You can customize weekly meals with the flexibility to get as much or as little as you need. You can pause or reschedule deliveries to suit your lifestyle. Factor is your solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking. and they're celebrating Earth Day all month long. So be on the lookout for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for Factor's lowest carbon footprint meals. Head to factormeals.com/solomonster50 and use the code solomonster50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code solomonster50 at factormeals.com/solomonster50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. But let's evaluate this final round here. AJ Styles. Finally, the man gets drafted. Good for him. Chad Gable, staying on Raw. No surprise there. That's where the Intercontinental title is. His goal is to win the Intercontinental Championship. You can't do that if you're not on the same show. Andrade, going to SmackDown. So now we know where Charlotte Flair is going to be when she eventually comes back. And Kiana James. Now, Raw needed at least one new face from NXT. I've talked about the Raw women's division in need of some more depth. She will help give them a little bit of that. I would have gone with Fallon Henley. I'm a Fallon Henley guy, but Kiana is fine too. And Fallon may well get drafted off the air, and I guess they may have already done the off-air picks. I have not seen yet. I will check that out in a minute here. She may yet end up getting drafted, either Monday or after the show on Monday. But they had a video package on Kiana. And then Jackie Redmond was back at the PC in Orlando. Everybody was losing their minds. Everybody was going crazy. And she interviewed Kiana. She said that being drafted meant the world to her. But she is ready to show the world why Kiana James is the 1%. Shawn Michaels showed up. He walked over to her. He never said anything to us, but he whispered something into this woman's ear, and they hugged. So that was a nice moment. Sometimes people get drafted. They've done this in the past where they'll cut back to the PC and then people get very emotional and they start crying. No emotion here. This woman, she cut her promo. She made her mission statement known. She wasn't in tears. I'm so happy I've been drafted. No, she's just, she kept it cool and calm. I don't know when they actually alerted her that she was going to be drafted. I'm sure she was very happy and excited. But she played it straight here. Now, backstage, Kayla Braxton was with Nick Aldis, and my man here was speed-talking. This man was fighting for his life to get his shit in as quickly as possible. They must have been winding him down before he even started cutting his promo. And he announced two new matches for Backlash, one of which is Bayley defending the WWE Women's Championship against both Naomi and Tiffany Stratton, so that match is official. And he let Teddy Long make the tag team announcement. So Teddy Long steps up to the plate. He's got a tag team match player. And the tag team match is Randy Orton and Kevin Owens will be taking on Tama Tonga and Solo Sikoa. And of course, the other match that was already announced earlier in the show, women's tag titles, Bianca and Jade challenging the Kabuki Warriors. That led to the main event, which was the WWE champion, the undisputed champion, Cody Rhodes, in action here, non-title, against SmackDown's newest recruit, Carmelo Hayes. Cody landed the drop-down punch early on. Hayes came back with a springboard takedown. They went to the final commercial break at that point. Both men eventually traded a bunch of chops. Cody backdropped Carmelo Hayes. Hayes came back with a facebuster and a great springboard fadeaway DDT for a near fall. Cody fought his way back, hit a disaster kick that turned Carmelo Hayes inside out. He took this incredible bump for this disaster kick. It was so clean. It looked great. Only got two. Both men traded shots from their knees until Cody lifted Hayes and hit a running power slam. Cody landed a Cody cutter after that for a good near fall. He set up for Crossroads. Hayes landed the first 48 out of nowhere, and then he headed up to the top rope. And after he jumped off the top, Cody avoided whatever it was that he was going for and hit a super kick. And then came a very awkward spot. Both men went for springboards off the middle rope on opposite sides, and both men missed. They both crashed and burned, although I don't think that was the intent of the spot. Carmelo Hayes, when he springboarded off, at least he landed flat on his chest. He took a flat bump on the mat. Cody was not so lucky. Yeah, when Cody goes for that Cody cutter, he reaches behind him. He landed directly hard on his right shoulder. And he's laying there, and boy, you know, when I saw that spot, I held my breath and I said, oh shit. I hope he's okay, because he looked like he was in some legitimate pain there. And I hope he was only selling. If he was only selling, this man can sell ice to an Eskimo, because he had me fooled. Maybe it was a combination of both, but he looked like he was hurt. And it's also the body language, because when Hayes just got right back up, and he walked over to Cody and went to go pick him up, and Cody was kind of like, you know, give me a second here, and holding his shoulder. And so that is what made me a little concerned there. Now, I have no idea what the spot was supposed to be. The only thing I could think of is, and it would have been a spectacular spot had they hit it the right way, is that they both springboard off at the same time, which didn't happen because Hayes launched himself before Cody did. So he hit the mat first, and then 2 seconds later, Cody landed on his shoulder. The only thing I could think of is Cody was going to catch him in midair, and out of midair, he would snatch him for a Cody cutter, and it would have looked great, because otherwise, I can't imagine this spot was, it went off the way that it was supposed to go. It was just so awkward and dangerous, and Hayes just got right back up. So this was very scary. You know, when you see your top guy, your champion, landing like that, especially at a time where there's so many other people who have been bitten by the injury bug, it's the first place your mind goes to. It's scary. Ultimately, though, he did hit Crossroads. So, I mean, he could move the arm. He was still selling it, but he did cover Hayes and he got the pin. AJ Styles, after the match was over, hit the ring and the two of them had a stare down, and then they shook hands to close the show. I hope Cody is okay. That's all I'll say until we get confirmation of anything else. I'll assume he's okay, hopefully. The match itself was good. I think it was a good spotlight for Carmelo Hayes. Obviously, I don't think anybody was expecting him to win. If so, I don't know why you would. Even a non-title match, you're not going to beat Cody Rhodes coming off his win over Roman Reigns at WrestleMania and going into a title match against AJ Styles. But it was a chance to put him in the ring with the biggest and best on SmackDown and give him a platform. And it's not like we haven't seen them do that before. They've done that occasionally in the past. But, you know, this was a draft thing. He got drafted, and they wanted to make his first night special. And so this is what they came up with. Carmelo Hayes will be a star for them. What his ceiling is, you know, I don't know. He was the NXT champion. He's got all the talent in the world. He's a charismatic guy. He's on the smaller side compared to a lot of other people on the roster. That could work against him, but I feel like that sort of thing works against you a little bit less than it used to, you know, in the old days, in the Vince McMahon era. So just going strictly based on talent, could he be a world heavyweight champion one day? Yeah, I think so. Absolutely. But again, Trick Williams is another one. When he ultimately gets called up, to compare the two, if I had to guess which one of them is going to get over more and have more success on the main roster, I still say Trick, I think, is going to get a better shot at it and probably end up doing better than Hayes would. I just feel like they look at him and they're ready to strap the rocket to this guy when he's ready. He's not ready yet, but he's well on his way. The reactions that he's getting, he's got this natural charisma. He's got every bit as much of, on the charisma front, every bit as much as Carmelo Hayes has, if not more. And the fans have really taken to him. So if he can just bottle that up, improve his game, step up his game in the ring, keep getting better. They just put the title on him in NXT. He's going to have the chance now, like Hayes did, to be the face of the brand, to carry that brand. Let's see how he does. You know, let's see how he handles the pressure. And if he passes that test and does well, he'll be an even bigger star when the time comes to get him up on the main roster. As far as the rest of this show goes, this was a boring show. This was not a great episode of SmackDown. This was a fucking missable show. The draft itself was a bore. Again, you look at the eligibility pool, you had to know that coming in because all the key names that maybe you would think, okay, this will really shake things up, you couldn't move them because they're in the middle of these stories that if you move them now, it's going to screw everything up. So they had to stay. Randy Orton and Chad Gable and all these different people. LA Knight, you could have moved him, but to me, again, it makes more sense for him to go after the U.S. title. Unfortunately, that meant that we didn't get a whole lot of surprises tonight. Kiana James was the biggest surprise. Yeah, when Kiana James is the biggest surprise of night one of the draft, that's a pretty boring fucking draft. But we're not done yet. The following stars went undrafted during the actual show. Alba Fire and Isla Dawn, Cedric Alexander and Ashanti the Adonis, Ivar, Shayna Baszler, all the remaining members of the OC, which is Luke Gallows, who just had a baby boy, so congrats to him and the missus. Him, Carl Anderson, and Meechan collectively were not drafted. And Zoe Stark was also not drafted. Now, I am told that there were post-show picks, so I am going to go right now before we go one step further. And I want to see if these names are listed anywhere here. Okay. So here are the picks that were announced after SmackDown. All the members of the OC on SmackDown. Shayna Baszler to Raw. Zoe Stark to Raw. Cedric and Ashanti to SmackDown. Baron Corbin. That was the story. That was the rumor going around that Baron Corbin, his run in NXT was done, and he was going to get called back up, which makes sense because he had that wolf dog thing going with Bron Breakker. Bron got called up. What else is Corbin going to do? So Corbin is back. He's on SmackDown. Alba Fire and Isla Dawn go to SmackDown, and Ivar stays on Raw. I was going to say Ivar goes to Raw. Ivar's been on Raw, so Ivar is staying right where he is. Nothing exciting at all. Absolutely nothing. Nothing exciting. It fits in perfectly with the picks on SmackDown tonight. Now let's talk about the names that are coming up on Monday. I'm going to read through this available pool of talent for night two of the draft. Now, DIY is on there. And DIY, they teased a possible heel turn with them on Monday. Tommaso Ciampa would not shake the hand of the champions after they lost. Has me thinking we may get a reformation of the way with Gargano and Ciampa and Candice and Indy. And maybe they bring in Dexter Lumis. You know, you're paying the guy. You may as well use him. I mean, what a concept. If that's the case, then I guess they would stay on Raw because you're not going to draft. I don't think you're going to draft all of them to the other show. So my guess is DIY stays where they are. Although I think they've already lost a whole bunch of times. You know, they've already challenged for the titles at least twice. I think three times. If you throw in the ladder match or WrestleMania, they probably would benefit from being traded. But if they're going to go heel, that's probably okay if you keep them on Raw. Apollo Crews is also eligible. Braun Strowman. I mentioned Braun Strowman on the podcast last weekend. This all depends on what the plans are for Uncle Howdy. Uncle Howdy and Alexa Bliss. Eric Rowan is likely on his way back. There's been a lot of talk about that. Braun Strowman could be with this kind of Wyatt faction. I don't know if it's going to be the Wyatt Six. There may not be six of them. If they're going to do something there, then he'll go wherever they need him to go. But if not, I think that SmackDown could use Braun, and you could build up Braun as a potential future challenger for Cody Rhodes. You build him up as a heel challenger for Cody later in the year, and that could be a program for one match, maybe two. I think he would make for a good opponent for Cody later in the year. Bronson Reed is eligible. Candice and Indy. Chelsea Green and Piper Niven. CM Punk, he wasn't there tonight like they advertised he would be, but CM Punk is eligible to be drafted on Raw this coming Monday. I don't see any reason to draft him away from Raw, given that, you know, he's got a ready-made match when he's ready to come back in a few months with Drew McIntyre. And also, if you want to do the eventual CM Punk-Seth Rollins match, they have to be on the same show to do that. So I think Punk is going to stay right where he is. The Creed brothers are eligible. They should stay on Raw. I would really like to see Chad Gable let go of all the dead weight with the Alpha Academy and get that heel trio with Chad Gable and the Creeds, like a modern-day Team Angle. I would keep them on Raw. Damage Control is eligible. That's Io Sky, Dakota Kai, and the Kabuki Warriors. Drew McIntyre is eligible, you got to keep him on Raw. You got to keep Drew on Raw. Or at least wherever Punk goes, but it's going to be Raw. The Final Testament. I wouldn't be surprised if they get drafted last. Giovanni Vinci. I wouldn't be surprised if he's drafted right out of the company after what they did on Monday. I don't think he's in the best position right now, unfortunately. Imperium, or what's left of Imperium. Gunther and Ludwig Kaiser are eligible to be drafted. I'll tell you something right now. If Gunther does not go in that first round on Monday, these people are out of their fucking minds. Okay? This man is coming off 666 days as Intercontinental Champion. All the great battles that this man has had, as valuable as he made that title, and as valuable a piece of the Raw roster as he has been. If you're Adam Pearce or Nick Aldis, why the hell would you not want this guy as, I mean, not even first round. Why wouldn't you want this guy as one of your top two picks on the show? Now, it looks like he and Kaiser are going to be a package deal, so I don't know how that might affect things, but Gunther is another one where you can make the argument either way. You know, move him to SmackDown, and he has some new people to work with. He could challenge Cody at some point. I don't think that's the play, though. I think the World Heavyweight title is the play for him. So I see them staying on Raw. Jade Cargill is eligible. Again, she shouldn't be. It's just idiotic. As it was with Braun. It's just stupid. And we know that they're not going to break up her and Bianca. Now, I will say this. There is a chance. I shouldn't say there's no chance. There is a chance because the rosters don't lock until May 6th. If they go in there at Backlash and they don't win, and I'd be very surprised if they don't win the women's tag team titles, if they don't win and they want to move Jade into something else, then you could certainly draft her over to Raw. I would not do that. I would keep her with Bianca, let that play out for a while. If they win the tag titles, they're going to float anyway. You can have Jade on Raw the following Monday because the women's tag champs are cross-branded. So Jade is going to stay on SmackDown. I don't see any reason to move her. The Judgment Day. Finn Balor, Dominic Mysterio, and JD McDonagh. No Rhea Ripley. I would love to know why. There are other injured people who are eligible to be drafted. Why would Rhea Ripley not be? It just doesn't make any sense. Now, Charlotte Flair is also not listed on here. That I can understand. I mean, she's been out for a while already, but again, if you're going to have people who are hurt and are going to be out for many months, why would they not be listed here? Doesn't make sense. Makes me wonder, though, if the reason is because they're going to split up the Judgment Day. And so they want to send Balor and McDonagh and Dominic to SmackDown. Priest is going to be on Raw because he's the champion. And when Rhea comes back, you know, she's going to work with Liv Morgan. So if they're going to ship the rest of the Judgment Day over to SmackDown, that's the only thing I could come up with. But do you really want to be splitting up the Judgment Day right now? Caden Carter and Katana Chance are eligible. Kevin Owens is eligible. Owens, I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do with Owens. Owens, to me, feels like someone who should move. Owens usually does move in these drafts. I mean, it kind of became a running joke there for a while where he was just ping-ponging back and forth every year. They didn't know what to do with him. He would fall through the cracks and they would trade him back and forth. I feel like on SmackDown, this stuff with the Bloodline, he's been feuding off and on with the Bloodline for 3 years now. And Cody is the babyface champion on that show. We have a heel champion on Raw. I feel like it's a better spot for him. Legado del Fantasma is eligible. The LWO is eligible. Carlito was listed with the LWO. Now I can't imagine he's going to make up with them, so I don't know what his status is. Naomi is eligible. Natalya, New Cash Republic, New Day, Odyssey Jones. Odyssey Jones has been listed as a free agent, I believe. Is he a free agent or is he on Raw? Because he's been listed for a while now, but not used. I thought he was a free agent, but he is eligible to be drafted. Pretty Deadly, Shinsuke Nakamura, who I've argued I would send him to NXT for a run down there. Tegan Knox, I'm seeing rumors about Tegan Nox being injured. I'm seeing no confirmation of this, but she was originally listed for that Women's Battle Royal on Monday and then mysteriously was never mentioned and was not in the Battle Royal. So I don't know what her status is. I hope she's not hurt. You know, she's torn her ACL 3 times in her life, once when she was younger and then twice during her wrestling career. I certainly hope it's not a knee issue. The Pride, Bobby Lashley, the Street Profits, and B-Fab are eligible on Monday. And last but not least, Tiffany Stratton is also eligible. I would not have Stratton on the same brand as Charlotte Flair. It might be a good idea to ship her over to Raw. Something I would be thinking about. NXT stars are going to be eligible as well. And I cannot imagine that we do not get Ilya Dragunov being drafted to one of the two brands. And if I had to venture a guess which brand it would be, that brand would be Monday Night Raw. And I think they'll probably throw one more surprise name in there. Maybe Fallon Henley. Maybe she'll get drafted. So anyway, we'll go through night two of the draft. That'll be after the Raw review on Monday. Let's take a look at the SmackDown poll, though, and what you guys thought of this show tonight. A very poor episode of SmackDown. 37% thumbs up for this show, 35% thumbs in the middle, and roughly 28% thumbs down. At Solomonster on X. Chime in. And let me know what you thought. Let's get to your super chats. How about that? Let's find out what's on your mind here with your messages. Find out what's going on here. And we'll start out with some of the early ones. We've got the early birds here dropping super chats. I thank you guys. It's been a good week here on the channel. We had a fun stream on Wednesday. And not necessarily everything was great, but we had some fun on that Wednesday night stream. Boy, did we ever. All right, let's kick things off here with the real CS02. Talking about Tony Khan, $4.99 super chat. What makes Tony's comments even more dumb is that he has got Ric Flair and Chris Jericho, both of whom have been accused of sexual assault under contract to his company. I don't think Chris Jericho has ever been accused of sexual assault. So you got to be careful throwing that around. I mean, there's been accusations and rumors of stuff going on, but yeah, let's pump the brakes there a little bit. Yeah, it was a very stupid thing for him to say. Hey, Jay Glow, thank you for the $9.99. We got Jay Glow chiming in here. Paul Heyman starts SmackDown off by talking out of his bulbous ass. No, Paul, Roman is not the biggest star in the industry. Cody is, who sold $1 million in merchandise over WrestleMania weekend. Who is the WWE champion? That's right. You let him have it, Jay Glow. You let him have it. Jay Glow is a big Cody fan. Jamie Dorsch, was Randy Orton just in character when he went off on a Mexican interview host in 2007 or 2008? I don't remember that interview. My guess would be that he was, but I'm trying to remember which interview that was. I don't remember. I don't remember which one that was. Spider Sense. WWE equals the Harvey Weinstein of wrestling. You know, Harvey Weinstein just got off on a technicality in his New York rape conviction. It was overturned. And I don't know yet if they're going to retry him, but I know he was also convicted in California. So whether it's in New York or whether they fly him out to the West Coast, he's going to be sitting in a jail cell for at least another 16 years, rotting away where he belongs. But yeah, that was big news this week, since you mentioned Weinstein. Arabian Night, pointless draft, nobody moved. Monday will be the same. The Judgment Day will stay on Raw. Same with Punk and Drew and Finn and Gunther. What a waste. Just do a trade deadline. Yeah, you know what? That might not be such a bad idea. I've wanted trades to happen more often, and I'm hoping they do. And if the drafts are going to be like this, I'm not so sure that isn't the way to go. DEH Sire says, if you are not going to change much, why not just have the people that aren't drafted stay in the same brand that they were on? Night one was boring. Let's see. Who else we have here? Got a bunch of them here. I agree, brother. Night one was very dull. We can agree on that. I got lost here. Where are we? Here we go. I got lost. The Juliet. Now we're caught up with the current ones here. The Juliet says, hope Cody's shoulder is okay. It looked legit. Yeah, that scared the crap out of me. They better hope he's okay. That would be a disaster. Absolute disaster. Robbie and friends with the $49.99. Again, I read that one earlier, but Robbie, thank you very much for the $50. Very much appreciated, and don't sweat it. His date ghosted him. You're going to go to SmackDown. But again, I think you didn't really miss much not being at SmackDown tonight. Base Beer says, I'm here for the review, as you always are. That's what I love about you. Thank you, Base Beers. Holiday 197, AJ and Knight should have been drafted to Raw to boost their main event scene. Hopefully Owens is drafted to Raw. SmackDown is too stacked. Yeah, that's what I said before about Owens. I think Owens needs the move. So the roster's lock on the 6th. He can do the tag match with Orton in France, and then he can go over to Raw. Rodimus Prime, Tony Khan, is the Ronald McDonald of wrestling. The more he talks, the more of an ass he makes himself. Heel T. Sim. It's Justin. Just want to say thank you for the birthday video. Thomas made me a birthday compilation, and I marked out when I saw yours. Justin, I got an email from Thomas earlier letting me know that he showed it to you, and I'm very happy that you finally got to see it. I hope it helped lift your spirits, and I wish you a very happy birthday, my friend. I hope everything is going well, so you're very welcome. Rodimus Prime says TNA Rebellion had 500 buys. That has to be the lowest bought pay-per-view of all time. Correct me if I'm wrong. I'm sure it's not the lowest bought pay-per-view of all time. I don't know what Heroes of Wrestling did back in 99. I mean, look, there have been some wrestling pay-per-views from smaller promotions that I'm sure have done less. As far as like a major or one-time major promotion is concerned, it's almost inconceivable to me. With all of the buzz that was around TNA for the rebrand at the beginning of the year, I mean, think about this, okay? They're coming off a hard-to-kill pay-per-view in January. This is before they shit-canned Scott D'Amore. That did the highest number of pay-per-view buys once everything was totaled in the history of the company. They set a record, their all-time pay-per-view record. All time, 20-plus years for Hard to Kill. And now they do a show that does 500 buys. I mean, if that doesn't show you from the penthouse to the outhouse in a relatively short period of time, that is the story of TNA this year. It's just, you know, they got rid of D'Amore and all that goodwill and all that buzz just went right out the window. And it's not because of a lack of talent, but all that goodwill they had built up with fans, and they just squandered it. 27,000 buys for Heroes of Wrestling. Wow. I didn't think it was that much of a drop. Well, then again, though, they had some big names on that show. They did have some big names on that show. They had Bundy, and they had Jake, and, it was Duggan on there? I don't know, but they had a whole bunch of names on that show, so I guess that makes sense. Donnie Yasu, that springboard botch looked like something out of every wrestling video game ever. You know what? That, I'm sure I've done that a few times playing the video games on Sound of Gamer. You go for a springboard and then there's nobody home and you just crash and burn. That's exactly right. Justin G, some Vietnam vet tonight. Sure wish I could have withdrawn from the draft. Thank you, Justin. Prince Vegeta says, Undertaker's price for chokeslamming The Rock. Give my wife a meaningless cameo on the show. Those legend segments can sometimes be really cringy. Yes, they can be. I mean, I didn't mind these so much. It's the cringy comedy they do with them that was just so fucking terrible. That was a Vince thing. Thankfully, those days are over. Double S, Tony Khan wearing a neck brace on the NFL Network was fucking gold. Pastor Cody Mitchell, my books, How to Live a Successful Life Embracing True Faith in a World of Conformity, will help a lot of people decoding political propaganda. That is from Pastor Cody Mitchell. It's a mouthful, but we got it out. Shout out to Cody. That's right, Justin. Takes a lot to pop me, but you did it. Alex with the $5. Brother Solo, when it comes to in-ring names, do you prefer wrestlers use their birth name or a nickname? Is there a significant impact? Not for me, there's not. As long as, if they're going to give them a nickname, if they're going to give them a different sort of regular name. I mean, there are some... Look, Dolph Ziggler is one that I never got used to. Dolph Ziggler is a stupid name. All right, I'm sorry. It's a fucking stupid name. And there are other people back, and more so back in the day, where they would come up with these names. Remember Lucky Cannon? Eli Cottonwood? I mean, we went through a pretty fucked up period there for a while of names. It was like a recurring segment on the podcast where I would go through these horrible names. And look, a bad name can really doom somebody. And so many guys got so many horrible gimmicks. I don't necessarily have a preference. I mean, I remember growing up, you had these cool names. You had the Legion of Doom and the Road Warriors, and you had the Ultimate Warrior and the Macho Man. Those were cool names. And I wish we could maybe go back to that, if they could come up with some more cool nicknames for people. So I think you want to at least have a mix of both. I just don't have a lot of faith in them to come up with cool names like that. So they may be better off going with their real names. But man, I have bad memories of that period. Michael McGillicuddy. Well, Michael McGillicuddy was like a combination of names. I think that was his mother's maiden last name. And he kind of put the two together. But it was fucking stupid. For a wrestler name, it sucked. But I just remember, Percy Watson and Eli Cottonwood and, what was that other one? There was another awful one. Well, I mean, look, even Husky Harris, making fun of Bray Wyatt being overweight. That was the whole point of the Husky Harris name. We found out from his documentary how much he severely disliked that name. That was a terrible name even then. This is the kind of shit that they came up with. Kenny Dykstra. Remember Kenny Dykstra? It's because you had writers in the writing team who were baseball fans. And they took sports names and just combined them. Like, this is how they would come up with this stuff. At least try to come up with good ones. These names are going to follow these people around for potentially their entire careers. Lucky Cannon. Jay Glow, thank you for the $4.99. What do you think of Tony Khan comparing the WWE to Harvey Weinstein? I think that when Tony Khan is able to build a little bit of goodwill with people, because I think there were people who were amused by him wearing a neck brace on the NFL Network and selling the injury, as goofy as it was, that there were people who said, okay, that's kind of funny, that's kind of cool, that's kind of entertaining. And some people may think it was cringy, but it got them a lot of attention. And then leave it to him to ruin all of that because he just can't keep WWE out of his mouth. And no, WWE taking shots at him over WrestleMania weekend is not an excuse for him to go out there when he should be focused on this major angle that they shot and talking about WWE. He just can't help himself. And then he uses that stupid line, which was dumb. Oofman Entertainment, Dear Boss Man, if it doesn't make sense to you and me, it somehow makes sense to WWE. Apparently. Arby with the $10. Thank you for the review and the work that you are doing, especially when work sucks. Good thing I was watching the Rangers game instead of SmackDown. Have a great weekend, everyone. Well, Arby, you have a great weekend as well. Thank you for the super chat. Alex with the $15 super chat. Brother Solo, forgive me if this question has been asked. Do you think the draft can be more impactful if they go the lottery method, similar to 2004, rather than coming out and just reading names? I think that if you would have done a lottery format, tumblers and stuff like that, with the same moves tonight, it wouldn't have made a difference. Because you're still being very conservative in your moves. Like, it doesn't change the outcome here. I really give a shit how they announce the names. But you've got to come up with some interesting picks. You've got to shake it up in some way. That's the more important thing. You can have all the tumblers that you want to, but if you're still basically announcing that this guy is staying on this brand and this woman is staying on this brand and there's not a lot of change going on, it's just boring. It just makes for a boring draft. Jacob Donnelly, a lot of security footage in wrestling lately. You would think that GTV was back. I'm sure Goldust is hiding somewhere. Retro KOH, remember the 06 draft where Paul Heyman took two names from Raw and SmackDown? They should do a draft like that where Raw and SmackDown each get one or two NXT picks and a couple of picks from each other, and that's all. Look, I've pitched the idea of having matches where there are draft picks at stake. You know, whether it's like a big pay-per-view match like the winning team in War Games, or you just do matches on television in the lead up to the draft, but you can do a few where there's stakes on the line in the match itself, and then Raw wins a pick, an extra pick, or SmackDown wins an NXT pick. They didn't do any of that. Like, there were ways that you could have made it a little more interesting, a little more fun, and they didn't bother with it. Jerome Eugenio, with the amount of TV time WWE has now, do you think title changes in house shows are a thing of the past? I think so. I mean, you'll still get one every now and then. They actually used to happen quite often over the years. But I think, like you said, with so much content now, and 5 hours of television just between Raw and SmackDown alone, and they're a slave now to their television partners. I mean, that's where they make their money. They make their money. They don't make their money on house shows. They're running fewer and fewer house shows. So I can't say that there will never, ever again be a title change on a house show. There could be a lower level title change, but do I think we'll see a world title or, an intercontinental title change on a house show? It's very unlikely. They're running fewer and fewer live events. And they make their money from Netflix and from Fox and from USA. And so that's where, if they're going to do a title change, they're either going to do it on Peacock or they're going to do it on one of those shows. Arabian Knight says, don't see any big moves from Monday. AJ should be on Raw. I agree. BW Roses, Tony Khan never learns, does he? AW is not WCW. Alex, when the time comes, do you think Cody will make the same mistake and resist the eventual heel turn? I think down the line, a heel Cody can produce fantastic television. I don't know that Cody is going to want to go heel, honestly. I mean, he's a huge babyface right now. Like what John Cena was at one time to WWE, that's what Cody is now to all the little kids and all the stuff. I mean, there was video from a meet and greet that he did, and I don't know if it was today or yesterday. It might have been in Kentucky somewhere. And it was like an hour before the meet and greet was even scheduled to begin. He had not even gotten there yet. And the line, it was like blocks and blocks down. It was crazy. And that's, one example. But, the $1 million in merch that he sold over WrestleMania weekend, Cody's a big draw for them. Never say never. You know, never is a long time, but I could see Cody being in that John Cena role where, you know, he either just doesn't want to do it or the company just doesn't want to turn him. I could see that being the case. Arabian Knight says, 7-minute main event. Shaking my head. Good job establishing Mello. Wings. A little bit of wings here on a Friday night. Who doesn't like a little bit of wings? Not his wings, though. They're all old and withered. Barry with the $22 Roman Reigns super chat. I just watched a clip of a recent Tony Khan interview where he calls AEW the Pepsi of pro wrestling and calls WWE a really evil juggernaut. Also, how do you feel about the 05 draft being a month long? I think that's too much. Doesn't have to be that long. I like the idea of allowing for more trades between the general managers, maybe even in the absence of doing an entire draft event. If it's going to be like this, you know, why bother doing anything formal? Dom Joseph, did you see the Harvey Weinstein comparison to WWE by Tony Khan? Don't do drugs, kids. I did, and it was a very stupid comment to make. Rob Reginio, been watching WWE for 40 years, and it's still remarkable to me how high the highs can be, like WrestleMania, and how low the lows can be, this draft. Great show, thank you. Maybe The Rock was right. I think The Rock turned out to be right. The Rock made WWE cool again. And now The Rock is gone. We got this fucking boring show. Where's The Rock? We need the final boss back. Joseph Stewart. I read that if Stone Cold was at WrestleMania 16, the plans were Austin versus Triple H. Austin versus Big Show. Austin versus Rock. So you read that if Austin was at WrestleMania, the plans were Austin versus Triple H, Austin versus Big Show, Austin versus Rock. They're going to put this man to work, apparently, the way this is worded here. Is he going to have to run the gauntlet at WrestleMania? Which match would be better for Austin at WrestleMania 16? I actually thought we might get Austin and The Undertaker that year, but they were both out. They were both hurt. Of those three, which would have been better for Austin? Austin versus Big Show, they did it on television, which is still ridiculous to me. He had just debuted the month before. He had been unbeaten so far. And they did that on the go-home show to WrestleMania. And they had Austin stun him and pin him in the middle of the ring. I guess that was kind of like his initiation, I guess. You know, I mean, of the matches that you wrote there, really should have been Rock and Triple H at WrestleMania. They waited the extra month because they wanted Austin to be healthy enough to be involved. So they did it at Backlash instead. Rock versus Triple H really should have been the match, though. So it's like, by process of elimination, you go with Big Show, but I would have done the Big Show match on the pay-per-view instead of blowing it off on television 6 days before, which is insane to me. Had they done Austin and The Undertaker, if they were both healthy, there would have been no streak. That would have been the end of the streak. Even Undertaker himself on one of his recent podcasts admitted that. He said he really wished he would have been able to have a WrestleMania match with Austin at some point. He goes, and it might have meant the end of the streak before it really even got going, but he said that he thought it would have been a lot of fun. I can guarantee you that it would have been the end of the streak. Because I do not see Undertaker back then just beating Stone Cold. Barry MK, I just saw the clip of Triple H announcing a draft pick, and right before he says the name, a fan yells Chris Benoit. And you can see Triple H smiling from it. I did not see that. We have got Emu. I hope I'm saying that right. I'm probably saying it wrong. Drop it a 10 spot. The Bloodline being drafted so late makes sense to me because this new version of the Bloodline is technically unproven. With Solo on a losing streak and Tonga just debuting, it doesn't give them much value right now. I would take counter argument, and again, I go back to what I said before, which is that even though Roman Reigns dropped out of the draft, if I'm a general manager and I want Roman Reigns on my show, that will only help my cause, bringing his wise men and his family over to my show. And you're not totally wrong. Solo Sikoa is on a losing streak. He's like 0-34 if you include house show matches. It's not like he's been lighting the world on fire. Tama Tonga hasn't wrestled a single match yet. But I'm playing the long game. I'm looking ahead, and I'm saying to get Roman, I got to bring in his boys. So I'm willing to do that. Plus, I get two people instead of just one, plus Paul Heyman, who just got put in the Hall of Fame. The man's a Hall of Famer, right? Why wouldn't you want him on your show? So that would be my counter-argument. Project. With the $5 super chat after all these years, did the AEW and New Japan partnership actually help New Japan in any way? I think it helps them when they get access to top AEW talent. You know, being able to get Bryan Danielson at the Tokyo Dome for a match with Okada this year, and he did the job, was huge for them. So Moxley being IWGP champion right now, the jury is out on whether or not that's going to help their business when they have some of their U.S. shows here. They've got one coming up in a few weeks. So I wouldn't say that it hasn't helped them at all. I think it has, having access to people like Danielson and Moxley, or even, you know, a Kenny Omega when they brought him in to wrestle Will Ospreay at the Tokyo Dome last year. Yeah, it's helped them in that way, but I think it's hurt more than it's helped. You can't say that it's 100% either way, but I definitely think it's hurt more than it's helped because, I don't know, just the exposure that it's given them and to lose those guys. You know, Okada started to form this friendship with Bryan Danielson and other people in the company. He was already friends with the Bucks. Losing him was a huge blow for New Japan, and losing Ospreay was a huge blow for them, and losing Kota Ibushi was a huge blow for them, and AEW has really been the beneficiary of that. I mean, maybe not Ibushi, but I think overall it's probably been a net negative for them, but you can't say that it hasn't helped them in any way, because it has. And they may have lost a lot of those guys anyway. You know, if they're not willing to pony up the money for a Will Ospreay, and if Okada wanted to go explore his options outside of Japan, with or without the AEW relationship, they may have lost that on those guys anyway. I mean, we'll never know. Owen Curtis. Hey, Justin, thank you for that gift and membership. Owen Curtis says, I've been a listener on and off since 2017. I'm a lapsed WWE fan. Looking forward to this optimistic new era, so we'll be listening more often from now on. Well, Owen, tonight was hopefully just an aberration, because tonight it was sort of more of the same from the past. There have been a lot of good shows from them recently, so I'm glad to have you back. Hopefully you'll stick around. Boots! What if Don Callis is the invisible hand behind the attack on Tony Khan and joining forces with the Elite, with Takeshita and turning on Ospreay and Fletcher? Why would Don Callis be behind the attack on Tony Khan if the Young Bucks are EVPs in the company? They have more power than him. What power would Don Callis have over the Young Bucks to beat up their boss? I don't understand. You got to flesh that out a little bit more, Boots. I could see them forging an alliance. I mean, they could always do that. I don't see it, though. I don't see it actually happening. I think it's just two separate stories. I think you're going to have Ospreay breaking free from the Callis family. That's going to be a totally separate story. And the Elite are going to go off and do their thing. Barry with $13. Hey, Barry, thank you. 2004 is actually my favorite draft show. Most of the names were low on the card, but they did such a good job making it all feel like a big deal that it really made me enjoy watching. You know, it's funny, you guys mentioned some of these earlier draft shows, and so many of them, they all just sort of run together for me. I remember when John Cena got drafted from SmackDown to Raw, and he was the champion. And it was during a segment Jericho was doing his talk show in the ring. And like that's one of the more memorable moments in Raw when John Cena came to Raw. So there are moments like that I remember. But a lot of those old draft shows, they just sort of run together. And I don't really have any specific memories. I know there was a draft show where Triple H wrestled Eddie Guerrero in the main event. That might have been their only singles match. And then there was like a huge fight. All the red shirts and the blue shirts started fighting. It was mass chaos. Austin was out there. Austin was the sheriff. He was throwing bombs. That I remember. I don't remember what year that was, though. That must have been... That might have been 05. Had to be 04, 05. I mean, Eddie passed away at the end of 05, so it had to be 04 or 05. West Coast James with the $20 says, "You're better at creating nicknames for Sound Off fans than WWE naming wrestlers. I'm Deadpool James Herrera, West Coast James, James Hollywood Herrera." Yeah, I've given out better PayPal nicknames to some of the donators than WWE has to their own talent over the years. It's hard, though. I've given out so many names over the years, I try not to reuse them, and it's hard. But I have done a better job, I think, than they have. Hey, James, thank you, man. James is one of the OGs. Appreciate it. Project with the $10 super chat. "Sometimes I think AEW fans miss Vince as head of WWE only because he was the perfect boogeyman for AEW to crap on. Ever since he left, the quality of AEW has gone down." I've said the worst thing that could have happened to AEW was Vince McMahon losing power and going away. Now, that was sort of the big hook for them at first. Like, you don't like what he's doing and his brand of sports entertainment, or you don't like him, come on over. You know, even for talent who didn't want to work for Vince McMahon, maybe they did and he didn't use them right, or they had a falling out, or they just didn't want to work for him. So AEW was the alternative. And with him being gone, they're less of an alternative than they used to be. They're not really an alternative in the same way anymore. You know, if you want to go work there, you can work for Paul Levesque. And they may have a great relationship with Paul Levesque that they wouldn't have had with Vince McMahon. Or he may push them and have something. I have ideas for them in a way that Vince wouldn't have, because Vince would take one look at them and be like, I don't see what's so special about this guy. So I think for fans and for talent, like you said, that boogeyman isn't there anymore. And yeah, that's, I think, part of why they've struggled. Not the only reason. But I think there is something to that. Joseph Brooks. "Cherish, keep, borrow, sell on the greatest era as far as matches and characters and their stars. Hogan era, 84 to 91. New Generation era, 92 to 96. Attitude era and Ruthless Aggression era." I mean, it's you're asking different things. You've got to separate it out. And actually, there's a question in the mailbag this week that's very similar to this that I'll answer on the show on Sunday that I think you guys may enjoy. So you're asking different things. You're saying matches and characters and, you know, all those eras. I love them all for different reasons. I grew up in the Hogan era, so I have a great fondness for that late 80s period. Not even like the early 80s, but like the late 80s. Late 80s, early 90s. As far as stars, I mean, they had tons of those. The New Generation era, I'm fond of. That, you know, Bret and Shawn, that was their era, and there were a lot of great matches then too. Attitude era was obviously white hot. When you look back at it, though, match-wise, there were some great ones, and there were a lot of shitty ones. But I will say this, and I guess it's kind of a tease for my answer on Sunday, but you look at the rosters And it's hard to top that Ruthless Aggression roster. I'm talking all time, including AEW today and WWE today and everything. That's a difficult one to top. Jeremy Rose, could you see a WrestleMania with babyface Roman against heel Cody? Maybe by WrestleMania 42. Love the show. No, I don't see that. I don't see babyface Roman and heel Cody being a WrestleMania match. And definitely not by WrestleMania 42, if it was to ever happen. I don't see it. Brandon Vasquez, what was the period of time do you think that the brand split was at its best? The very beginning, when they first started it. 02, 03, that period there. That was when I felt like they also adhered to it the most. But again, the talent they had during that period, and it was very separate. They had separate pay-per-views. It was as separate as the brand split has ever been. And ever since then, it's just been a steady decline. Todd Warner, what is WWE speed? Ricochet was just crowned the inaugural champion tonight. WWE speed is for people who have the attention span of a gnat and they want to see a bunch of 3-minute matches. It's a concept. They have an agreement with Elon Musk. It's a Twitter thing, or, you know, it's an X thing. And it literally, it's a tournament to crown a speed champion consisting of matches that do not go longer than 3 minutes. And I know that it was dropping on X every Wednesday. I think Wednesday at noon. And they would tape the matches before SmackDown, maybe before Raw. But it's got like a 3-minute time limit. They're very quick. So if you're not a huge fan of the in-ring, or you don't have a lot of time to spend watching wrestling, then WWE speed may be for you. As far as WWE speed, there was a period of time many years ago, probably back in the 80s, where WWE speed was all over the place. But that was off camera, not on camera. Barry MK, after reading that super chat, I'm glad Stone Cold was not at WrestleMania 16. They would have worked the man with a broken neck to death. I was going to say, man, you guys are putting him in a gauntlet match there. He's going to wrestle Triple H, and then he's going to wrestle The Rock, and then he's going to wrestle The Big Show. Justin G, WWE needs to do a clerical error bit with Imperium. A brand got Gunther and Kaiser, but they didn't file the paperwork in time, so Vinci goes with them. I don't know about that. If they need a new GM, though, if one of them fucks up and they got to replace somebody, I'm just saying, you got William Regal waiting in the wings. He'd make a great GM like he did on NXT. Jeremy Rose, what is more ridiculous, or what is more ridiculous thing you have seen in wrestling? Tony Khan's involvement or Michael Cole in a match? Yeah, Michael Cole in a singlet with those horrible tattoos, technically getting a win over Jerry the King Lawler at WrestleMania, in a match with Stone Cold Steve Austin as the special guest referee, pretty much trumps anything Tony Khan has ever done on camera, as far as the weirdness is concerned. I mean, Tony Khan himself is just a weird guy, but I would go Michael Cole on that. Joseph says, I have seen reports that the PG era is dead. If so, thank God. But fun fact, did you know that the PG era lasted the longest in WWE history from 2008 to 2024? That is incorrect. And I'll talk about this briefly on Sunday. But since you guys are here, I'll give you the scoop. Here's a little scoop for you. Just lean in close. I'll whisper it in your ear. The PG era, it died years ago. We have not been really, truly in the PG era in probably over a decade. I mean, people say PG because when the shows go on the air, it says PG in the corner of the screen. And there have been elements of PG in the shows. WWE has not truly been PG in years. I mean, people have convinced themselves that it is, but it really hasn't been. So I'm not sure where you would have the mark off. They have allowed some edgy content here and there. Now, you know, we're getting a little bit more of it now. But this has not been a truly PG product, like truly PG in the way it was, you know, initially in many years. So again, that's one of those reports that is exaggerated to make it sound more sensational. Like, oh, the PG era is dead. It's like, you know what, though? The PG era has honestly been dead for a while. I don't know what you would call this era. You know, it's not like, it's not the Attitude Era, and we don't need to go back to the Attitude Era because there was a lot of dumb shit in the Attitude Era also. We're sort of in the middle somewhere, and I don't know, it's been called the Reality Era. Now we're in a new era. So what do you call this era? The Paul Levesque Era? We'll have to come up with a different name for it. The PG Era, though, has not been 2008 to 2024. Jay Glow, have you watched the A&E biography on Randy Orton? It was outstanding. Did you know about his behavioral problems and almost dying of an OD? I have not seen the biography. I did hear good things about it. I think he also gets into his AWOL status in the military and the events surrounding that. So I would like to watch it if I could figure out where to watch it, because I don't have A&E. But no, I have not seen it yet. We have got a Dupree 771, a Dupree. How to fix the tribalism in wrestling? Unfortunately, there is no fix. It is here to stay. All you can do is try to rise above it and not get sucked into the vortex. Like Jericho talks about the Jericho vortex. Just don't allow yourself to get caught up in that nonsense. But it's, you know, as long as social media exists and we have these two competing companies and they are going to take shots at each other. And look, there's one thing about like friendly shots, and then when you sort of get into, you know, some of the stupid shit like what Tony Khan said with the Harvey Weinstein comment and all that, which only feeds into the tribalism that much more. It's not going to go away. If you think it's going to magically just go away, you're fooling yourself. So there is no fix for it. All you can do is just not partake in it. It's the best advice I can give. Nick Grasso, what's your thoughts on New Japan buying out Stardom? To be honest, I like the idea of wrestling people running the company, then a bunch of suits and ties. Yeah, I mean, that's just a formality more than anything else. I mean, both companies were under Bushiroad as the parent company, and now New Japan is basically from a sort of an executive perspective and a organizational perspective. They're taking over. Tanahashi commented on it. It's more just to, you know, make sure the scheduling of events, everything is organized and everything is in sync. The person who I think was running Stardom before, whose name I think is Okada, I think Taro Okada is his name, is still going to be running it. So I don't expect there to be any sort of major changes. It's more just to streamline things. It's not, again, you read that story, oh, they've taken over Stardom, it sounds a lot more radical than it really is. John Cena being drafted first in a month-long draft did spoil Batista moving to SmackDown. Also, fun fact, the first two times John was on Raw was in the 04 and 05 draft shows. And that comes from Barry with the $10 super chat. Some fun facts from Barry. Project on Boogeyman Vince's comment, on the Boogeyman Vince comment, do you think AEW is trying to make a Boogeyman out of Punk and Triple H? No. Not Punk. I mean, Punk's already a Boogeyman to some people anyway. Yeah, Triple H now is in the Vince role, kind of. I mean, Nick Khan is really running things. Technically, Triple H is just the creative head, although I think he has a lot of responsibilities there. So they may try to make him the boogeyman, but, you know, Tony Khan has, you know, he has a lot of valid reasons to be upset with WWE for some shady shit that they pulled on him. And then also, I think he goes out there and makes these comments about they're evil and they're this and they're that. And not saying there isn't some evil shit that's happened on their watch, but when you sort of lump everybody who works in that company together like that, like, oh, everybody in management and everybody, it's an evil, evil company. You know, they're the evil villains and we're the underdog babyface superhero. Yeah, it's one thing to call yourself a challenger brand, which is what they are, right? They're number two. But he just takes it to the extreme, and you know, he takes it so personally that that's where you end up with comments like the Harvey Weinstein comment in that interview. When the focus should have been, because it was kind of a folksy, you know, kind of fun thing with the neck brace and everything. It was all, I mean, you could tell the anchors, they were not taking any of this seriously. It was almost like they were just looking at the whole thing as a joke. But they were having fun with it. It was getting them some exposure. Tony kept mentioning TBS and TNT and plugging the date of the television shows. And he's using the analogy like we're Pepsi. And the analogy would be like we're Pepsi and they're Coke. And I think people would understand that analogy. But then it's like we're Pepsi and they're Harvey Weinstein. I go, that's not how analogies work. What kind of analogy is that? We're Pepsi and you're Harvey Weinstein. He can't even get that right. It's the weirdest analogy that I've ever heard. Brandon Vasquez, if Austin wrestled at WrestleMania 16, I would have liked to see a triple threat with him and Rock and Triple H. Although that match probably happens at Survivor Series after all. Yeah, I mean, if Austin doesn't get hurt, that was going to be the Survivor Series main event. So that would not have been the WrestleMania match. Oz and Glorious. Tony Khan could cure cancer, and guys whose incomes rely on shitting on AEW and Fed checks would still make it about ratings, attendance, and how AEW is dying. Juan Ocampo. Imagine if Brian went with the name Buddy Peacock in WWE. Funny thing how Nick Khan quietly sold his shares today. What is going on there? Nothing is going on. Nick Khan is not going anywhere. And Buddy Peacock, yeah, I would say he dodged a bullet there. Buddy Peacock. Amazing. Waza 123 MUFC says, I miss Brock so much. Well, just be patient because I'm pretty sure Brock will be back soon enough. I don't know when, but I think Brock Lesnar will be back in WWE. Arabian Knight, any update on Cody possibly being injured? Nothing yet. We'll have to wait until tomorrow and see if there's anything that comes out, but I would be surprised if he didn't get hurt. If he did, hopefully it's nothing serious, but that looked very scary. And Barry MK, someone posted the Randy Orton A&E doc to YouTube in full, good quality. It's been up for a month. It still is. All right, I'll have to go search for it. I did watch the first episode of the new Hidden Treasures or Most Wanted Treasures. It was a WCW episode. Mick Foley gets together with Hulk Hogan and Hogan apologizes to him for comments that he made about Foley many years ago on the Michael Landsberg show where he basically mocked him. He says, when I was in the gym training every day, he was eating cheeseburgers and all this other stuff that he said. Hogan now is a very reflective man. You know, the problem is that Hogan is such a bullshit artist that you see that and you want to believe that this man is, you know, being very reflective in his life and genuinely believes in the stuff that he says, where he's telling Foley, man, it was just, I had to apologize to you. I couldn't stand not to. It just, it bothered me that much that I made those comments about you. And I sit here and I say to myself, do I honestly believe that Hulk Hogan was that bothered by the comments he made 20 years ago about Mick Foley? That it was just eating him up inside? I don't. Because if the man's lips are moving, he's lying. That's the problem. When you tell so many tall tales and you lie and you make a career of lying, it becomes hard to believe when you're telling the truth. So that was kind of comical to me. But then, like, I'm watching this episode, and Foley goes to this guy's house. He goes to this guy, he's a collector. And they're looking for Kevin Nash gear, because Kevin Nash did not keep any of his shit. He doesn't keep his gear, his boots, belts, anything like that. Like, he has basically nothing. Like, he's talked about this on his podcast. So they go out and they find a guy who has maybe the two most sought after Kevin Nash singlets. The singlet that he was wearing at Bash at the Beach 96, the night that Hulk Hogan turned heel and the NWO was formed. So that's pretty rare. And the singlet that he was wearing, the black one that he was wearing the night in the Georgia Dome when they did the finger poke of doom, and he lost the title to Hogan. And somehow this guy, he came into possession of these two. And I'm like, and obviously it's important to him. You could tell how important it is to him. And Foley is like, well, you know, we'd really like to have that to share with the fans. And so, you know, would you be willing to part with it? And you could see this guy's internal struggle. And I'm like, no, don't part with it. Or at least, you know, make sure you get some coin for it. And Foley makes an offer, I think $2,000. And it reminds me of like when Top Dollar was in that same role on the show in like the first season. And that was like their standard offer, $2,000, $2,500. I'm like, get the fuck out of here. This multi-billion dollar company is going to cheap out on this rare item, $2,000. So of course the guy says no. And then Foley said, well, we really got to have this. How about $6,000? Right? And the guy still, he just can't bring himself to do it. And I'm like, good for you, man. Good for standing your ground. And then Foley goes, well, how about if we sweeten the pot a little bit? And how about two tickets for you and a guest to go to the grandest stage of them all and sit somewhere in the first five rows for both nights of WrestleMania? And I'm sitting here and I'm like, don't do this. Like, don't do this. And the guy's like, wow, that's, you know, an interesting offer. And he takes the fucking deal. They gave him WrestleMania tickets and he took the deal. The least you could have done is say, I'll take that and the $6,000. He didn't even do that. So he gave away these two rare Kevin Nash singlets for two tickets to WrestleMania. And I'm like, they fucked this poor guy over. You know how hard he probably had to work to find these things? And obviously it meant a lot to him. He had them on like these mannequins on display, and they're autographed too. They're autographed by Kevin Nash, and then Nash verified them later in the episode. Like, yep, that's the real deal. And I'm like, they did this guy so dirty. I know, and you could tell watching these shows, it's so fucking phony and scripted and, who knows, behind the scenes, maybe they worked some other arrangement out. I'm just going by what they showed on TV. They did that guy so dirty. I was so pissed off when I saw that. Like, what the fuck? You know what I mean? Like, come on. You're going to cheap out on this stuff. Foley's like, oh, I have a budget. Lita is the other one. They'll send Lita out to go get gear from someone. Lita's like, oh, we have a budget here. I'm like, fuck out of here, you and your budget. Give me a break. Two tickets to WrestleMania. I'll tell you what you could do with your two WrestleMania tickets. Nick Grasso. I'm more upset than that guy was. Nick Grasso. Is it true that Jeff Jarrett is bringing back his gold bar company? I would love it. I haven't heard anything about it. Global Force Gold. Devin from NJ. Is Seinfeld a show about little things or nothing? Seinfeld is a show about life. That's what it's a show about. It's a show about all the little experiences and the big experiences that those particular four individuals experience on a daily basis. And it's the greatest sitcom ever made. Chris Mikesell, If Stone Cold was never hurt, then Rock and Triple H would have never carried WWF on their shoulders or on their back. Would Stone Cold be the champion going into WrestleMania 16 or the challenger? He would have been the challenger. I mean, if he was even wrestling for the title, he either would have been challenging for the title or not in the title match, I believe. But I don't believe he would have gone into that show as the champion. If they would have had that triple threat match at Survivor Series, pretty sure Triple H would have gone over there. Robert Rose, AEW should play off the ongoing joke that Tony is wasting his dad's money and his father is revealed behind the attack to take over the company. Yeah, we were talking about that on Wednesday. I could get behind that idea. Arabian Night, NXT might be in trouble, especially in the men's division. Without Braun, Baron, Melo, and Ilya, they don't have established main eventers. Time to sign someone or some free agents. Ricky Starks, man, he's got his bag packed. Unfortunately, I think his contract still has a long time left on it. But I'm sure there's some people that are on that AEW roster right now that are counting down the days. That's also why I said, you know, someone like Nakamura could be used for a period of time in NXT. I would send Shinsuke down there. You keep him on Raw or send him to SmackDown. You know, and he's going to be doing the same shit that he's doing now. Send him to NXT for a while. There's no harm in that. Creflo Half Dollar with the $5. Are we going to get a Mr. McCon character in AEW now? I hope not, but props to him for keeping kayfabe alive. Yeah, no, that would be a horrible idea. Tony Khan does not need to be a recurring character on television. Not now. Not ever. So let's put that idea to bed. Let's put that to sleep. Because that would be a terrible idea. All right, the goal tonight for Be the Booker was 450 likes. And I am very happy that we are currently sitting at 537. So thank you for that. Hit that thumbs up. I mean, you guys have killed it all week, right? We hit our likes goal for every stream going back to Dynasty. I mean, it's like, look at us. Look at us. Look at you now. Look at where we are here at the end of the week. And again, we have killed the goal. So let's go ahead and be the booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to be the booker.
Let's end the week on a high note with some tag team Be the Booker. This is the way they should do the draft. I would endorse this idea. How about this? Like, truly, a true randomized edition of the WWE draft, Be the Booker style. And this is how they do it. And you don't know where it's going to land, but wherever it lands, that person goes to whatever brand gets the draft pick. We begin with Team Hell No, Daniel Bryan and Kane, the Faces of Fear, and Team Hell No. I don't like that match. No offense to Haku. I don't want to say bad things about him because I want to live to see my next birthday in October. So I will only say nice things about Haku, but I don't like that match. You know, I'll tell you what, I should get in touch now with the Raid people and charge them. I just gave them a free plug. They owe me some money now. All right, women's Be the Booker. We begin with Queen Zelina. You know, we have the King of the Ring and Queen of the Ring coming up next month in Saudi Arabia. So Queen Zelina, that was the Queen's Crown. That was different. That was an awful tournament. Awful. Terrible. But she won. So, she was the queen for a while. She was queen for a day. Queen Zelina going to be taking on Ty Mello. What is going on here? What is happening here with these fucking matches? Come on. I'm trying to book some main event level matches here. Ty Mello and Queen Zelina is not a main event match. What are we doing here? Oh. We have Bad Bunny. Bad Bunny. I'll give the man his flowers. His match with Damian Priest at Backlash last year, one of my favorite matches of the entire year. I'll give the man his flowers for that. But boy, this is, I don't know what's going on here. I don't know. Let's put this thing out of its misery. Let's just end this. Bad Bunny gonna go one-on-one with Kane. And not just Kane. Like, if it was like early Kane, maybe. This version of Kane with this shitty mask, no. Absolutely not. Not gonna happen. You know what? You win some, you lose some. That's how it goes sometimes. I actually think that's a very appropriate version of Be the Booker to go with this draft tonight. I think my picks are pretty much in line with their picks. So I think it all works. Bad Bunny versus Logan Paul. It could happen one day. They're both in there. Cameron Spencer. Nia drafted to SmackDown as I predicted. She will beat Bayley in the next few months and then be a key Bloodline member going forward. I could see her in the Bloodline. That is very possible. And Devin from NJ. Since The Sopranos and Breaking Bad got movies years after, do you think we need a S.H.I.E.L.D. movie? I've always wanted to see a S.H.I.E.L.D. movie, but too much time has gone by. And Sean Ryan, I think, talked about that he's thought about it. So much time has gone by now. You know, it's not going to happen. I'd love to see it. I love The S.H.I.E.L.D. The faction and the television show. Although one of the cast members would be unavailable because he is currently sitting in prison for murdering his wife. In real life. So that's Julian, the person who played Julian, the cop on the show. So Julian would not be able to be part of any S.H.I.E.L.D. movie, but it's not going to happen. And Raph, per his own Insta, MFT equals motherfucking Tonga. Oh, so I was right. I was right. See? What did I say last week? What was my guess? Motherfucking Tongan. See? I know what I'm talking about. Well, that's okay. That's not bad. Can't call him that on TV, though, so. I don't know what the point is. Anyway, there you go. So now we know what it means. All right, I'm going to head on out of here. Thank you for a very strong week here of streams. A lot of wrestling going on. We're not done with this draft, though. We still have one more night to go, and I sure as hell hope it's better than night one. And we'll talk about, especially because it's a three-hour show on Monday. Imagine 3 hours, a three-hour version of what we got tonight. That'll be on Monday night. Before that, though, episode 859 drops on Sunday. Got a lot to talk about there. I will see you back here on Monday night after Raw for the Raw recap. Take care.